Crossover is...
Crossover dribble.
Sing for the crossover.
Kyrie Irving. Crossover in the lane.
One of the most famous crossovers of all time.
Behind the back, an ankle breaker on Chris Paul.
Crossovers.
Crossover.
Close to the double crossover.
The crossover continues to evolve.
Crossover is powered by McCoy Roofing, the ultimate standard in roofing. No George today. Crazy Matt Stein is in, though, along with Gary Sharp for the Gary Sharp Show. How come Mahomes only got me 12 points? I mean, come on, man. I mean, I invest some serious draft capital in that guy, and I get 12 points?
Yeah, he didn't even break a sweat yesterday.
I know he didn't.
That's how bad the Broncos were yesterday.
They were. Yep. You figured they'd be better in the snow because they're from Denver, right?
Well, I thought they would be more competitive. I didn't see it as a 10-point game, but,
yeah. Well,
but man, Drew Lock was awful again, and that's two games in a row against Kansas City. He's been bad.
You know what they're pissed in is, though, is the running game and Lindsey. When Lindsey's healthy, they're a much better team. Without him, all of a sudden the offense looks lost. And when he got a concussion yesterday, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, without him, they're a completely different team. But I looked it up. I was watching the Nebraska game over. I go back over to look at my fantasy. I'm like, what the hell's going on? How do they have 30-something points and Mahomes has, like, no yards?
Yeah. So Kansas City
won. Then I watched it back.
Kansas City won by 27 yesterday,
yeah.
And they went 0-for-8 on third down.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
No, we had a conversation earlier in the year about that. It was another team that did the same thing.
So the Seahawks did that when they beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
They went like 0-for-7 on third down.
That is nuts.
Uh-huh.
It's twice this year that's happened.
Mahomes was okay yesterday. Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything flashy. They were able to run the ball.
Yeah.
But they played really good defense, and their special teams, which has kind of been hit or miss this year, was really good. And I mean, I didn't see him winning by 27 in that game.
Pringles took care of the business.
Well, hey, 102 yards in the snow on a kickoff return?
Yeah.
That's heaven, man. You deserve to do multiple snow angels all over the state of Colorado because the Chiefs own Denver. They own Denver.
Here's a guarantee, okay? Almost. If it snows, it's going over. 75% of the snow games go over the total. People always talk about, bad weather. If it's not windy, don't worry about anything else because the worse the footing, the better the offense usually produces. And that's what you saw. All those guys are falling down, and Byron Pringle's just going down the field. That's what happens.
How does John Bostic not get suspended today?
I'm surprised that he didn't get suspended. Now, it wasn't by the helmet. It was with the shoulder. But still, it was an obvious slide by an old quarterback. There was no reason to do anything but touch him.
And it's not like he doesn't have a history.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah, I was surprised when they said that he wasn't going to be suspended. I figured, you know what you do? You hockey him. You suspend him as long as the player you hit is out. That's what it should have been. If 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. You suspend him for that amount of time.
Well,
whatever. It was dirty.
Whatever happened in that game, I think Dallas now is referred to as the national football team the rest of the year. You cannot call them the Cowboys.
Can't call them the Cowboys.
No.
The two worst offenses I watched all day yesterday were the Cowboys, who actually had a couple of plays that were actually decent, and the Patriots, who were worse. The Patriots' offense was much worse than Dallas' offense, and Dallas' offense was bad.
So Dallas, Dak Prescott's already won the MVP.
Yeah.
With New England's offense, I think Cam is broken. And I don't think Cam has looked right since he came back from COVID.
He hasn't looked right.
I say the same thing about Zeke. And, you know, Zeke got blown up yesterday as well. But they just haven't looked right.
He's talking about in terms of pass pro he got blown up.
Cam Newton doesn't look right. He looks broken.
Yeah.
But that's also an offense that doesn't have any explosion at wide receiver.
Yep.
Their wide receivers haven't done anything.
But they've been this way now for 3 years, and it's still an offense. Well, I know it had Tom Brady. That 4,000 yards last year passing and early in the season was moving the ball.
So this is what has happened in the past with the Patriots is they've had injuries. It seems like the Patriots always have injuries.
Sure.
And they have some deficiencies at skill positions.
Yeah.
But they have great coaching, and they have a great quarterback that's able to overcome those things.
Yeah.
And now they're in a situation where they've gotten just atrocious quarterback play that they look really bad. I mean, I think to the point of you have to start wondering about the future in New England because that's a bad football team. That's a really, really bad football team. And I don't know what's going to happen with Cam because he just looks completely out of it.
They'll get guys back next year, obviously, when you're talking about moving ahead from COVID and guys being out. And for the most part, outside of the second round, they draft pretty well, and so they'll put more people in there. I really believe in Belichick. The thing about Cam, though, is that this was the season for him to rehabilitate, right, his career, and now I have no idea where it's headed.
Yeah, and I do think COVID had something to do with it.
Look how well he was playing before that.
He didn't look good against Denver.
Yeah, he was playing well before that.
They're not moving the ball down the field. You know, they're afraid to throw on first down. It's just a weird offense going right now.
Well,
but they also got to be, you know what? So credit to San Francisco yesterday. Kyle Shanahan and his staff are really good coaches.
They're great coaches.
They had a great game plan yesterday.
Yeah.
And Jimmy G was pretty good. He was good enough for you.
Yeah. It's crazy that they were an underdog going in the game because they were one of my money line picks, and it didn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But because, and this is my feeling, and this is done now, but you feel so away about Belichick coming off of a loss. And so it was one of those things where I bet it one way with the Niners winning it outright, but then took on the other side the Patriots minus a 2.5, thinking, do I really believe that this team's going to come out and play poorly 2 weeks in a row with Belichick coaching? Well, by the way, yes, this is a new team. You can throw all that stuff out of your trends now. It's done.
See, and I thought, you know, the Denver game was a little bit discombobulated because of their practice schedule with COVID.
Right.
I thought this week they would be a lot more prepared, but it just shows they have issues on offense. They have a lot of issues on offense where they don't have anybody in the passing game.
Well, Cortland Sutton was going to be a top, I thought, 10 receiver this year. And you lose him. That's the first thing that happens. And you're led by your defense. You lose two of the best players on your defense. That's pretty much what. And then their offensive line's crap. So, I mean, there's nothing about Denver. When I looked at them in August and thought what they could be, there's very few things that are still remaining from what I saw and thought in August to now.
Oh, you mean Denver?
Denver.
No, I'm sorry, but New England.
Oh, New England.
New England.
Well, New England's got even worse problems.
What they have at wide receiver is, I mean, Edelman is not the answer.
Well, he's over the hill. And if you got him throwing more passes than you're catching, that's a problem.
No.
And last week he threw two passes, and I think he caught one.
In Denver's situation, Sutton I like a lot. And I think they had a really good draft. But
the last 2 years they've had good drafts.
I don't know what they can do with Drew Lock.
And even Noah Fant, who you know has been banged up and had a nice catch late in the game, he's a guy that could be a superstar. But you have to find a quarterback that's going to be able to give him the ball. And is Drew Lock that guy? Based off of last year, I thought he had a chance to have that second or third year bump along with the great defense that we saw from the Rams, that we saw from the Niners, that we saw from the Eagles. Nothing like that. But mainly, I think it's injuries, but I don't know if Drew Lock can be the guy.
No, and you're now in a division where you might have the fourth best quarterback out of four teams to play in that division.
I would agree with you.
Herbert and Carr ahead of him.
I would agree. So it's funny because I was talking with somebody from Denver, and I was telling them that if you look at a guy like, say, Herbert coming out or the Washington quarterback, Eason, right, or you look at a guy like Fromm, look at any of those guys, they all have something they do really well. One guy's a big strong arm guy. One guy's kind of athletic. The other guy's a really good West Coast kind of guy. I don't know where Lock fits. Like, in that group, I don't know where he fits because he's got a fairly strong arm, but he's not accurate. He's okay athletic, but every time he runs, he gets hurt. I don't know where he fits in terms of a quarterback in the league.
No, and the way he reacted yesterday, so he's wearing a knee brace. Did you see the play where he was scrambling? It was late in the game, and he basically takes a divot out of the field. He goes down.
He tried to do the slide thing?
And the knee brace broke.
We've seen that before, yeah.
And I'm like, why are you wearing a knee brace? But
Was it his front knee?
It was his left knee.
Yeah. So a lot of coaches want their quarterbacks to wear that on the left knee for people falling on their leg. A lot of coaches preach that. You'll see it throughout. Mm-hmm. Look throughout college football. You'll see braces
on the
front.
NFL.
Yeah, you'll see braces on the front. We've seen guys slide and do that before. Tom Brady did that once.
It looked in real time.
Yeah.
It looked awful. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Like
and then you realize, okay, he went to slide. His knee brace broke, and he took a divot out of the field, and he's down. And you're like, okay, what's going on here? And they come in, they rip out his
I saw Matt Ryan do that one time and brought up this huge thing of grass on his leg. But he's not a great athlete. I'm comparing him to quarterbacks who aren't great athletes, but he does run okay. He's an enigma.
I don't know. I've watched him for two times against Kansas City where you watch him very, very closely. And I don't know that he has it. But that's been a weird position since Elway has been in charge after Manning. Of who you're drafting, who you're signing, who you're playing. I'm not a fan of Vic Fangio. I like their roster. I think the roster is better than it was at this time last year.
Yes.
Healthy.
When it's healthy, When it's healthy, it was a possible 9-win team. Give me, okay, name any team with a good quarterback. Name any team with a good quarterback.
Kansas City.
Okay, first round draft pick, I think 11th overall. Name another one.
You mean just...
Did they have a good team with a good quarterback?
Good team with a good quarterback?
Yeah. Good team with a quarterback.
Green Bay.
Okay.
We just go off yesterday. Green Bay.
Bottom of the
Pittsburgh.
First round.
Green Bay, Pittsburgh.
There's a place to go get quarterbacks. Okay? It's usually in the first round. It's usually in the top 15 picks. Now, there's some exceptions out there, right? Rodgers dropped to the end of the first round. Drew Brees was either the last pick of the
Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, third rounder. Obviously, Tom Brady. But for the most part, If you want to see where you get your quarterback, it's pretty much limited to 1 through 15. That's where you get the guy. Now, you can mess up there, obviously, which has happened. We've seen that. He's messed up there. But that's where you get him. Chicago you can't be Bear telling him you're going to get him in the one. Second. Yeah, exactly. You're going to get the guy in the second or third round. Look, it just doesn't work that way. That's not what happens in the NFL.
I have visions in my head of them saying that Paxton Lynch was going to be their franchise
quarterback. Which drove me crazy. I remember having a conversation with an analytics guy about him. I was like, watch against, this is how you do it. When you're scouting, if you're a draft nerd like me, you want to scout a quarterback, find the two best defenses he played against and tell me how he played. Find the two best. And the two best defenses he played when he was at Memphis, they beat him up. And they tried to make him throw in a tight windows, and he couldn't. Go back and look at Trubisky. He had a great year that year. Mm-hmm. Great year. There were two games. One was a rain game. I believe it was against Notre Dame. And then another game where you saw him play against a top 20 defense, and you're like, I don't know about that guy. Without scrambling around, he couldn't do it.
Well, I didn't like him to begin with because
he had 12 starts.
Yeah, he had been the man.
Only had 12 starts.
But those quarterbacks go to the Senior Bowl or they have in-person workouts and all it takes is one person to fall
that's
in love
all you
with
needed,
them,
yeah.
And their voice becomes the loudest in that room. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you're in the draft in the first round, you're like,
we're going to trade up and get him.
But there's also a lot of quarterbacks that come out of college that they are the same player they are in college. They're just surrounded by better players. Daniel Jones turned the ball over in college.
He did.
What is Daniel Jones doing in the NFL? Turning the football over. Yeah. That hasn't changed.
Yeah. It's why I thought Matt Ryan wouldn't be a good quarterback in the league because he had all those picks at Boston College. But then if you go back, and I did this, I went back and looked, about five or six of them were tipped. Mm-hmm. You know, wide receivers dropping balls, a couple of them where he was just trying to throw it up for Hail Marys. And he's like, well, maybe all of them weren't interceptions. Daniel Jones fumbled the ball. You are a fumbler. I know Damon hates this, but Sam Darnold was a fumbler in college.
That doesn't change.
And it's a bad team. I know he plays for it, but you're a fumbler. You stay a fumbler.
Adrian Martinez. He's got 21 fumbles in three years. Well, and we're just starting the third year.
So you said Nebraska. So 55 in 2 years. That's not just him.
I saw Mitch Sherman had that nugget today.
28 and 27 in the last 2 years. But we said this on Friday.
You can't have your starting quarterback that has put the ball on the turf 21 times.
Well, you actually can and win games. You know what his name was?
Well,
Taylor Martinez. Taylor Martinez and option quarterbacks. Option-based quarterbacks fumble the ball. You go back and look at Nebraska back in the 90s when they were the great team. You still had teams fumbling the ball. It's about losing fumbles and making up for it when you're at now 2nd and 15 or 3rd and 8 because of a fumble. If you can make up for it, it doesn't matter.
People lose their jobs over people fumbling.
Oh, no doubt. Well, the guy fumbling should lose the job. That's the first guy that should lose the job. But if you look at quarterbacks that run this kind of offense, go back to Oregon. McKenzie Milton didn't. First year he did. This offense results in fumbles. It just does.
But this will add to the conversation that I'm going to get into later is you have such little margin of error.
That's true.
That when those things, they get magnified even more. Yeah. If you're playing well, you can have some things that cloud over those. Yeah. You're like, yeah, that's still not a good thing, but you know, it didn't hurt us. We got a great defense that turned around a quick change defense and forced a 3-and-out.
Mm-hmm.
But when your margin of error is so small, those things get magnified and they turn into a touchdown. And the next thing you know, you go from 14-14 to 38-3 to finish the game, and you're like, wow, okay.
Or obviously, you turn the ball over and a guy runs it back, but it just ends your
which
drive.
Which takes points away from you. I mean, that's one of those things that, you know.
It's a bad bounce.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fortuitous bounce for Ohio State.
Sure.
But you're like, okay.
But still,
it's the thing with this team that one little thing seems to not as I didn't see it snowball as much on Saturday, like in terms of the body language and the way they played.
Right.
But it's still those one or two little things that snowball that they can't fix.
There's a couple times.
And when you're playing a team like Ohio State, you definitely have no margin for error.
The delay of game. Coming out of a kickoff, which is the fourth time that's happened in 2 years, and I was screaming at my television because there's no excuse for it. But after that happened, they stay in the same formation. You run the ball to Luke McCaffrey. He loses 1 or 2 yards. Then sack. If you have any kind of drive there, and it probably is a drive if they don't get the delay of game, then you probably don't give the ball back, and Ohio State doesn't go down and get that score. And then, of course, double it up at the start of the second half. So that one little mistake, the clean drive thing that he always talks about, I started charting it the first year he did it. And then I started going back and looking. As good as he was as an offensive coordinator at Oregon, as good as he was at Central Florida, two things were common for the most part. Fumbles from the quarterback and penalties. They've just been common. The thing at Oregon was you had the personnel to overcome it. And the second year at Central Florida, you certainly had the personnel and offense to overcome it. At Nebraska, if it's Levi, Cade, and Wyatt as your wide receivers.
Sneaky athletic guys.
Most days, you're not going to overcome it.
No, but it's in the DNA of this program. Is the penalties are in the DNA.
It is.
And it is.
And they dropped off last year. They did better last year, but.
It's cumbersome, but they're. So look at 10 drives on Saturday.
Yes.
Three that were absolutely clean.
Three clean, yep.
They turned into points.
Yep.
Seven that were not. What do they turn into?
Yeah.
No points.
And even their best drives that weren't clean was the one where Martinez fumbles it at the 49 or the 50-yard line for the touchdown. And then the one that McCaffrey had. They were rolling on that McCaffrey drive when he ended up fumbling it. Those are two times where you say they just get field goals, which they probably would try to get touchdowns because they were down by much. I mean, that's a 14-point swing. That's huge. Think about the feeling in the program if they have 14 more points. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 52-34, something like that.
Saturday is such a mixed bag of the positives and the negatives or the things that are still there. You know, it's and I said this to Damon on Big Red Overreaction, is it shows you the reaction to Saturday where Nebraska played pretty well for 25 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, they were in it to win it, and they look like there's progress that is being made, and there is. I mean, you're still playing Ohio State, who I don't think played great, but Ohio State's got enough that they're really, really good.
They're going to get better.
Yeah, they're really, really good.
They're
for their first
better.
Game out of the box, they're really, really good with some new guys that were playing. It just shows you how low the bar is that you could get beat by five touchdowns when you got scored 38-3 and go, okay, here we go, which changes this weekend where the bar gets raised a little bit more because of who you're going to play.
Right.
But, I'll ask Verz all this coming up here in a little bit. You know, guys that are competitors are going to go, 52-17, come on, man. The rest of us will go, okay, I see this, this, and this. This still needs to be worked on. But at least there are investments that they've made in a year and a half, that showed up on Saturday that still didn't make up 52-17, but may do something this weekend or when you play Northwestern, a team that is not as talented as Ohio State, which you just can't match guy for guy.
I could name six or seven players for Nebraska on Saturday that played better than the players that were in their spots last year. So that's a positive. Line of scrimmage, Nebraska played better on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Special teams, much better. Outside of one punt, William Prisap was much better. They made a field goal, which is a huge jump for this program based off of last year. It's a bunch of things to talk about. The problem is that Adrian Martinez and also Luke McCaffrey made big mistakes just like quarterbacks did last year. They had wide receivers that did not make big plays. Whether they had the wrong guys on the field or not, didn't happen. And you also had lost yardage with your running back trying to run plays that don't fit him. Those are the same things that happened last year. So clean those up. Keep the good things. You go and play a Wisconsin team with or without Graham Mertz. You can beat them. Just like we thought going in, you can beat them. But if those other things still happen and you're playing the wrong wide receivers, then that's what's going to happen.
Okay, so your best player on the field, regardless of what helmet he was wearing, was?
Overall, for both teams?
Overall, yep,
92.
Haskell Garrett was unbelievable.
92.
Anybody that goes back and watches the game,
watch
number 92, and it's crazy
because unblockable.
In August, he was shot in the face.
Yes,
they didn't
both
even know
cheeks.
They didn't know if he was going to play Saturday. He dominated whenever he was on the field.
Yep. He made both guards and the center look bad many times. Yeah, he was the best player on the field.
And then Justin Fields played 7-on-7 with world-class wide receivers.
And then the wide receivers, number five, you watch him play and you think to yourself, okay, coming in, he's probably the third receiver. He's the best one on the field. And for some reason, I don't know why, you notice who was on him a lot of times? It ended up being eight. If your physical in-the-box safety is stuck on a soon-to-be NFL wide receiver, you're going to be in trouble. And that's what we saw on Saturday.
That was the worst safety play I've seen Nebraska have in a while.
It was pretty bad.
And I didn't think we'd be broaching that on the day of the game.
Well,
I thought that would be an area.
We worried about them in coverage.
You wouldn't have to worry all about, but.
The young guys are your coverage safeties. The guys you have in with Markell Dismuke and Deontay Thomas, Williams, those guys are hitters. Those are in-the-box safeties. And supposedly know the system, and so they'll be able to put themselves in the right position. Your young guys are your guys who can cover.
See, I'll give Deontay Williams a little bit of a pass. First game of the year, first game coming back off an injury. There's a lot you want to do. You want to hit a home run on the first couple of plays. You want to be, you know, and so.
And you're on Garrett Wilson a lot.
Then I think, you know, you got, I'm in trouble. And he started to play a little rogue football, mm-hmm. and he got away from what he was taught to do. Right. So I'll give him a pass, and we'll see what he's like when he comes back for the second half on Saturday against Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But I think it's a...
If he has the comeback.
If
I mean, you make the appeal. I think if you're a reasonable human being in the Big Ten office and whoever that goes to, you look at that play and you say, that was not targeting.
I hope so.
And I'm an official guy. I lean to most times that it's targeting. In that situation, the only thing he did in terms of an indicator was launch. Everything else was fine. Mm-hmm. Where he hit him, what he hit him with, where he hit him, everything's fine.
Well, here's all part of that rule. Is we can watch Nebraska and Ohio State play and two guys get thrown out for targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the first half of Tennessee-Alabama,
I couldn't believe that.
A Tennessee defensive back lights up an Alabama wide receiver.
It was obvious.
Lights him up.
Yep.
And they go to review. So the process, they're going through the process.
Yeah.
And they don't call it targeting.
I was shocked when he stayed in the game. I had to turn the volume up. I had the volume down that game.
That's where the problem is across league to league. Yeah. It's not an SEC thing.
Right.
It's... From league to league, the interpretation is different.
Penn State game two. It was one very similar to Penn State game where I thought it was going to be, and I'm like, really? He's staying in the game? So there's crews, obviously, that lean different ways in terms of what their priorities are. That happens. That crew seemed to be looking at the targeting a little bit closer. Now, in terms of holding, on Ohio State's side, they weren't looking at that much. But on Nebraska's side, they were looking at that.
See, if I'm an official on targeting, I would throw my flag every time and let it go through the process upstairs where, you know, they got it right on the JoJo Doman.
They did.
That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
They go upstairs, they look at it, and they're like, no.
Because in real speed, I thought immediately that was.
Well, when you slow it down, they're like, nope, that's a good football play.
Right.
Okay? But then rewind the tape. This whole thing that has happened with targeting is trying to make it safe.
Yeah.
Is guys go for the knees.
Yeah.
Okay. And most guys will say, man, just hit me in the head.
Yeah.
You can hit me in the head. Don't go for my moneymaker downstairs.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jack Stoll, I'm sure we'll find out here in the next couple of hours.
Yeah, that's not good.
Jack Stoll probably is done.
Yeah, that was planted. Yeah.
I mean, that was an ugly hit. But guys will say, hit me in the head. Don't go low. But in that situation, every time I would throw the flag and let it go upstairs and let them sort it out. But I've also been on this for numerous years, is they should have different levels.
Yeah, it should be like soccer.
You know, they should have
red card, yellow card.
They should have different levels: flagrant one, flagrant two. Yeah. Do you need to be ejected?
We have it for unsportsmanlike conduct already. If you get unsportsmanlike conduct, you get one. If you get a second one, you're gone. Mm-hmm. If it's bad enough, they can kick you out.
And there, the ones that are bad enough are pretty clear.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah,
that's what happened with John Bostic.
Yes,
that's pretty obvious.
I mean, you can go, okay, I get it. You're done for a half of the next game.
And even what Cam Taylor-Britt did was silly, or as coach called it, dumb. But that really is a yellow card.
Yes.
What are you doing? That's silly. Unsportsmanlike conduct, 15-yard penalty for you.
Uh-huh.
Do it again, you're out.
It's almost like intentional headbutting.
Yeah, that's what he did.
You know, kind of, I was in the wrong spot and...
I dropped my head.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But if they hold up, those two guys missed the first half against Wisconsin where they shouldn't. But I don't know if college football is ready to go there to go down that road of trying to... parse through what is targeting and not targeting.
Yeah.
And the level of targeting, because you know the word that always comes up is intent.
Intent. And it has nothing to do with it.
And if you're in stripes on the field or you're sitting upstairs in a replay booth, you have no idea how to judge intent.
Yeah, intent. And it's not a part of the rule, obviously. But I think if we do move to having different levels of it, intent would be what you look at. You would say, Cam Taylor-Britt did not intend to hurt anybody with that.
Yes.
Did not.
But then this is the other thing that I would like to see him do. With when it comes to targeting, is when you go to a review, and I really like to see this across college football because it started to happen in Major League Baseball. When they go to a review and they throw it back to New Jersey, you immediately get an email on what their explanation was.
Yeah.
So why they let the call stand or they overturned it. I would love to see that in college football where when it goes to upstairs, the Big Ten office, or wherever somebody might have the replay booth, most of them are in the stadium. I think all of them might be.
Yeah, they are. There's still a person in their ear, though.
Then they give you an explanation of why they decided to either stick with it or change it, and it's word for word and how they interpret it.
Yeah. Only problem with that in baseball is that every single play is looked at, and I don't know who's the person that steps away from doing that and gives you the information. Baseball, obviously, a lot more downtime. But you'd have to have one specific person who's there in the room that can do that, you know? And there's somebody upstairs, because if something is missed rule-wise, they'll tell the official, and sometimes they'll stop and they'll get it right. So whoever that person is, maybe that's the person that, that does that. I don't know.
See, I would just like an explanation on what they saw.
Well, the white hat's got to do it, but the white hat is the person that's got to do the full job.
But you know why they
don't. People make fun of them for doing it too much, but you got to.
But you know why they don't? Because everybody's like, keep the game going, keep the game going.
Yeah, I get
let's
it,
go,
but you have to. It just makes it easier on everybody if you just tell them what happened.
And we'd be fine.
You know, Ed Hockley got made fun of all the time. We never doubted why Ed made a call, though.
Yep.
He explained it from the very beginning to the very end. That's what needs to happen.
Now,
with the
I've heard, because I know a couple of the guys that work the replay booth or in the booth in Lincoln, is it depends on the age of the official. You know, they all have the same idea in the interpretation, but some younger officials will look at it a little bit differently than some older officials. Who older officials tend to be right away. There's targeting.
Yeah.
Instead of okay, let's rewind it. Let's rewind it. Let's look at this here.
Yeah.
In a little bit closer.
Because when you do the rule or when you interpret the rule, there are people that believe as officials that it should be interpreted full speed.
Mm-hmm.
You call the game, you play the game at full speed, you call the game at full speed. That's not the case. We know that. It's now a slow motion game.
You have a lot more guys who would be thrown out.
Now it's a slow motion game and you just do it that way. I thought the most egregious out of all the penalties was the face mask they called on Markel Dismuke when he's being held the entire time he's trying to run on the field. And there's the official, the white hat's looking right at it. And I know the back judge is looking at it. I'm like, well, somebody should see that. The man is being grabbed. But no, they called that. They say he is the one doing the offending. No, that was ridiculous.
There's another, speaking of replay review, I was really surprised they didn't try and review when Fields was down.
Yeah,
when Daniels tried to bring him down in his knee.
Yeah, and then Horace came and grabbed him. Yeah,
that no one was like, "Hey, we got to look at this."
Yeah, I don't know why
That was a key play early on in the game.
Because the next play is a touchdown.
Yeah, it's a 42-yard touchdown pass.
As we talk about, they review it. They look at every single play. So they had enough time. They went quick, but there was enough time. Now, on the other hand, I do believe that if you are in that situation as a coach, there's somebody that's got to be monitoring what's happening in terms of the play replay to be able to quickly signal down and say, you got a timeout. You can call a timeout and challenge. Obviously, you get one of those, I believe, a half in college football, something like that. They could have, but the guy upstairs should have gotten it, or the woman upstairs, however, should have gotten it. Because it was fairly obvious that his momentum was stopped for some reason. That should have triggered them to see why was it stopped, and then they would have got the knee down.
I noticed a lot of new people working Big Ten this weekend.
Yeah, there were.
And I don't know if it's because
I think some people opted out,
or the regular crews, when the Big Ten was not going to play, they went and took assignments in
other
conferences.
Worked other jobs, maybe. That's possible.
Because there were a lot of new officials.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first time, and it's ironic, I was thinking about this, you and I talked about it last week or the week before, about a female.
Yep.
I don't think a female's ever worked a Nebraska game until Saturday.
When she came across the spot the first time, I was like, oh, okay. You know, she doesn't have her hair in a ponytail like the other young woman does, but you could tell right away when she ran up.
And it was a great moment in the Minnesota-Michigan game. It was the first all-African-American officiating crew.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's in a place like Michigan, it's a good place to have it.
And but they showed the picture of the entire crew, and I'm like, I don't recognize a lot of those. So it may have been
a lot of officials opted out.
And so you had some younger officials that might be working group of five conferences, either MAC officials that haven't started yet, got an opportunity to work a Big Ten game. Officiating across the Big Ten was a little bit of a hodgepodge this weekend.
Well, I will say that watching a lot of college games, that's the case in every conference. Every conference that I've learned by Twitter has the worst officials, and trust me.
And the Pac-12 hasn't even started yet.
And the Pac-12 is supposed to be the worst out of all of them, but you go back and you look, there's misses in every one of them. You know, the Alabama, obviously you mentioned that one. That was a miss in the SEC. We miss out-of-bounds calls. We miss knees down. That just happens. You miss them. The problem is, and you mentioned this about Nebraska, and I think you guys talked about it as well on Big Red Overreaction, is when something is missed, you don't put your head down. You don't go, oh, woe is me. You go and pick up the 3rd and 13. You go and pick up the now 2nd and 8. That's what, the problem on that game, 10 of 15 for Ohio State, 3rd and 4th down. That can't happen.
Nope.
That was the first thing JoJo Doman talked about was we need to get off the field. If you can't get off the field, you're still not all that overall deep at defense. You see how tired Colin Miller was all the time he played. And so the same thing can happen in any game where you're not being able to get guys off the field.
Yeah, I haven't looked at snap counts. I got to imagine that Honus and Miller played
56 plays is all they played on offense.
Yeah.
Nebraska only played 56 plays on offense. That's nothing for
but
this offense.
I got to believe with Reimer not making the trip that Honus and Miller may have played nearly every single play at inside linebacker.
Here's the thing. when they had both on the field. Now, when they went with the two-man front on the ground, and then they had the two outside linebackers, they had one linebacker in the game, and then everybody else was secondary. So they had been out at that point. But you're right. I mean, both those guys played a ton of snaps.
And Justin Fields found them when they were on the field. I mean,
yeah. I mean, honestly, out of the whole thing, the guy that got targeted the most was Williams.
I'm just saying,
in terms of got, that's the guy I think they were looking for the most. Now, also, they got Boodle in that off coverage, but I think part of that was Williams, too, not being deep where he's supposed to be and watching the linebacker. But yes, Nebraska's had problems with linebackers running with running backs or with tight ends or wide receivers going back to 2011. That's just some of the things that are common now for Nebraska every year. Now, maybe Luke Reimers makes a difference, or some of these young linebackers, once they finally get in, make a difference. But at this point, still, Nebraska, it seems to have linebackers built for the old system opposed to what they see now.
And Honus and Miller were not a problem. I mean, Will Honus had his moments. Colin
game.
Miller was okay as well. It's just they were on the field a lot, and they were running a lot. I mean, they were in that whole you know, when you give guys 10 to 15 yards and you're just going to exploit the underneath, and Nebraska says, well, maybe we'll just go tackle. You know, and Justin Fields is playing 7-on-7 with his world-class wide receivers. I mean, you're going to exploit middle linebackers. They're going to get tired, but they got to make plays.
Yeah,
you know,
you got
to
play all the way to the end of the play too. There's a couple times where you see Nebraska players who are following the play who aren't running full out. You have to. You never know if the play is going to come back to you, and you see that. And I know they see it upstairs. I know they see it on film today or yesterday, and they're going, "Why aren't you running full to the play? You run full to the play, you may actually make it. You never know."
Yep.
That's something that needs to get fixed.
But those things can be fixed. Those things can be fixed in a week.
Yeah.
It's not the whole physical part you can't fix in a week. You know, you go to Michigan a couple years ago and you get bludgeoned. And you go, this is going to be about a two-year process. You know what? Kind of showed up. They didn't run you over. But the little mistakes, like you were alluding to, you can take care of those in a week.
The good news is that they did look more physical on both lines of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
Even though 92 gave both guards some serious issues. Other than that, they moved. You didn't see them bow. You saw the defensive line making plays in the backfield, which we haven't seen a lot in the last couple of years. A lot more tackles for loss, and obviously the sacks that they end up getting as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of positives.
And the next part of Zach Duvall's lab is the speed.
Yeah. And they have it. A lot of those guys aren't playing. For whatever reason, they're not playing. And I think that's what drives Nebraska fans more, drives them crazy more than anything else. They see these guys come in. We talk about them as recruits. We talk about them when they get in camp. We talk about them in practice and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, you never see them.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask yourself, well, why is that guy playing?
Well, defensive back, you're going to get to see Newsom and Farmer more.
Yeah,
maybe.
And I thought Newsom had some good moments when he was in the game.
He did. You know what? I'm glad they let him play.
Yeah.
And they weren't afraid.
Yeah, he made the tackle on the
Travis Fisher was not afraid to make a change back there.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of was forced to when you lose two of your guys.
Yeah.
But then you have a third that is not very good. But where is Noah Pola-Gates?
I don't know.
He was on the trip.
I don't know.
I don't know that he ever came on the field.
He obviously the first couple years he was injured. You know, when he got here he was injured, then he got injured again with the shoulder. I don't know. I wonder where he fits in this system. We were talking about coverage guys opposed to in the box guys. He's not big. He's a good hitter.
No.
That was the high school level. I don't know what he's like in coverage. So I don't know where he fits. And does he pass the test? The number one thing for these coaches is, do you pass your test on Friday or whatever day they take it? Do you know the defense? Do you know the offense? If you don't, I think those are the guys that don't play.
Well, that's somebody you can't have in your program that has not yet played, really.
Well, it helps to play him just for people down the road who are looking at coming to Nebraska and going, well, that kid came from where I'm from. Why is he not playing?
And especially when you are as highly touted as he was coming out of high school.
Yeah.
He's come here and he really hasn't played any quality minutes.
We haven't seen him do much, no.
Well, we'll see. If those guys might be pressed into service for at least a half.
That might be a good thing.
So I'm trying to think. You have to stay in the locker room, correct? You still have to stay in the locker room for the first half that you're out? Or you get to be on the sidelines? Did they make that change when they said, okay, guys don't have to do the walk of shame and go to the locker room? When you have to miss the first half, you can actually stay on the field?
I would hope with the fact that they changed it when you get ejected, you don't go to the locker room anymore. I would hope that was the case.
Because
I don't know why you wouldn't.
It used to be you had to sit in the locker room for the first half and then
which
came
makes
out
sense
with
when
you
were ejected, but now you're not. Now you're just off the field, so I would hope not. And you want those guys out there to be able to have communication with them to show them, hey, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's happening to your backup. But hopefully, it's only one of them.
Oh, yeah, to be engaged. I mean, you're just, what are you, sitting on the training table? Just sitting there watching TV for 30 minutes of football and go, okay, I better get dressed.
Yeah, and the question is it Graham Mertz? What's happening there? Is it a third-string quarterback they're playing against? Whatever else. That is an excuse me, intriguing part of this story out of nowhere.
Paul Chris, for the second time today, said he can't comment on specific players and their status. He's got to be seething that that got out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he has to be livid
that
somebody leaked that information.
And it had to be from inside of the department. Yes. Obviously inside. Yeah.
Somebody would have to know either they'd talked to Graham Mertz or they were around the discussion about the testing.
Or it could be someone who is friends with him or in school with him who knows that he had to go into quarantine. Because he had to go in the meantime while I was waiting the PCR test. So maybe someone knows he went in the quarantine, and then that's how the information got out.
So I'm told by 11:30 they will have his PCR test to determine if he's gonna if it was a false positive. But if you're Wisconsin, they do have a history, since they started daily testing, of multiple false positives. And I think you will find through this whole process that the Big Ten will probably do what the SEC has started to lean more towards, is the PCR test, where that is more reliable than the antigen test.
Which makes sense, and that's what they said all along. If it happens where you get the antigen test early on, our confirmation is going to be the PCR, because that eliminates most times false positives.
So that's what the SEC has started to lean towards as they get closer to game day, if somebody tests positive, is then they quickly follow up with that. And so they're testing more with the PCR. I think they're doing PCR three times.
Yeah, that's expensive.
It is, but as you know,
I know they have
all
the
these conferences are, they are paying for it, and then they'll take it out of your whatever you get paid at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's what Moose said.
I think is the way to do it, instead of each conference having to come up with money right now. I think on basketball, the NCAA should pony up and provide these mid-major conferences that cannot do daily testing or even three times a week testing. They have enough money to help those mid-major conferences out in basketball so they can at least have a season.
When does that start? Basketball?
Basketball 30 days from now.
Oh, so it's after November 3rd. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Why are you even discussing that? I mean, I don't get it. What are you talking about?
Can't believe that Penn State might be 0-2 before Election Day, but that's all into politics.
Not a surprise that Indiana won that game.
What did we say?
The line was perfectly set up for you to say, and then the Rutgers won. So I had the money line parlay with Rutgers, which obviously took a lot. Six turnovers by Michigan State. But what Indiana did, you had to have two guys in one weekend score touchdowns they weren't supposed to. That's amazing. You never see that. Kids know now to get down. And he ran in the end zone.
The Falcons should lose for the uniforms they wore.
Did you know right away that it was the Falcons?
No.
See, I walk in the sports bar and I start looking for where I know everybody is. And I had a double take. Which team is that? Is that the Houston Texans? Yeah, that was weird looking.
Yeah, they should have lost just for that. And they falconed.
Yeah, they falconed. Well, the city of Atlanta, it's called Atlantying now. It's not just falconing. It's every sport. Pick a sport. Well, Atlanta's going to choke.
I just threw you like a softball there.
Thank you.
All right, Michael. Thank you.
See you later.